Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 119 for November 18th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
He's my dad. He's my dad. 92 years old, still walking. That ain't half bad.
How did this song help someone get a job in the whiskey business? I'll have the details in a few minutes, along with an in-depth interview with the master distiller behind the world's most popular whiskey, Jimmy Bedford of Jack Daniel's. First, though, let's look at the news. Wayne Hennessett at Willow Park Wines and Spirits in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, has done it again. A year ago, Wayne told us about his purchase of one of the few Glenfiddich single casks ever sold by the distillery. Last year's was a 1975 cask. Now, Wayne has acquired a 1976 single cask from Glenfiddich. The cask only produced 220 bottles, and Willow Park is selling them for $600 Canadian each. By the way, unlike last year, the Canadian dollar is trading at par with the U.S. dollar. The last time that happened? 1976. Back at the end of September in episode 111, we heard about the debut of Ardmore Distillery's traditional cask single malt in the duty-free market. Now, word comes from Beam Global that Ardmore will be exported to the U.S. sometime in 2008. Beam acquired Ardmore as part of the Allied Domecq breakup. It's been used in the Teacher's Blend for many years now. By the way, this past week, Beam sold off its California wineries and vineyards to Constellation Brands for more than $800 million. It's planning to focus on the spirits business in the future. One of those spirits is, of course, Laphroaig. And on Wednesday, the 21st, at 2000 hours GMT, that's 3 p.m. Eastern Time in the U.S., distillery manager John Campbell plans to lead an online Laphroaig tasting through the Friends of Laphroaig website. I asked John to explain just how this one's going to work.
Well, what we're going to try and do, we're going to do it live. So that's always maybe pretty dangerous, but it's going to be good fun. There's going to be me, Robert Hicks, and Jim Murray, and we're all going to taste four or five of the Laphroaigs and then get people to email in questions, stuff like that, tasting notes their own.
They can go through the Friends of Laphroaig site to find the details, right?
Yeah, it's all available in kind of the Laphroaig website just now.
Now, this time last year, or about the Isla Festival last year, you were just getting started as distillery manager, so it's been almost a year and a half now. How have things gone in the year and a half for you?
Yeah, hopefully pretty well. A lot of changes happened in the last kind of year with just previous to that, the kind of 6 months before that, we'd been taken over by Beam Global Spirits and Wine, so changes happened pretty fast over the last kind of, well, just over 2 years now, so, but it's all good, it's all positive change, so that's good.
What's been the biggest change for you in terms of actually running the place yourself now?
The biggest change, wow, just trying to make sure that we keep up with demand, but keeping the same principles that hold true to Laphroaig. We just need to keep making sure that we don't compromise it and just to get volume out.
Anything new coming down the horizon or anything fun you guys are working on?
Yeah, well, the rest of the world just now has a 25-year-old, but the reason the US doesn't have it is because you've still got the 30-year-old, so you're going to have enough stock of 30-year-old through 2008, and beginning of 2009 you should see a 25-year-old Laphroaig replacing that. Another probably new thing next year about this time, the 15-year-old will evolve into an 18-year-old, so that'll be coming all towards the end of next year, beginning of 2009.
How are the stockpiles going these days? Do you have enough to continue doing the 10 and the 15, or is that part of the reason for making the 15 and 18?
Well, it's just kind of, stockpiles is probably a lot healthier now, but it's younger spirit. And again, one of the kind of positives under Beam was they really wanted to build the brand, so we're laying down more just now. It just takes 10 years for it to get ready, so it's sleeping, waiting to come out. But we're doing okay with 10-year-old, and we're kind of, the great thing is there's so much demand for the product, so it's all positive problems we've got just now.
Now, I've seen some comments from other folks in other countries that they're having a harder time getting Laphroaig now. They're having, especially up in Canada, they're not able to get as much of it as they used to. What's the case with that?
Not sure, because we are still supplying some of these kinds. It does seem to be we're kind of getting a bit stretched, which I guess is a good problem to have. But we do still supply some of these countries, and it's just maybe just going to have to, I don't know, look a bit harder, or maybe through Friends of Laphroaig we'll try and do some stuff to help these folks out.
What's your plan now that you've got the first year and a half under your belt? What's the plan for the future now, as far as you're concerned, as far as your tenure running the place?
Well, kind of Laphroaig is Laphroaig is Laphroaig, so we don't really want to be changing too much, because a lot of people like Laphroaig for what it is, and it's kind of really at the top end of the flavoured packages that you get out there. So we have to remain true to our principles that way. We are innovating, like, so through quarter casks, stuff like that. We've got a few more kind of things up our sleeve that you might see in duty free kind of towards maybe the end of this year, beginning of next year, but don't want to say too much yet, because it's not a done deal, as you guys would say.
Can't hint about any of that, huh?
This is different. There might be kind of, it's a special one for duty-free, where we maybe do a lot, maybe three types of wood, put it like that.
A three-wood Laphroaig? You guys are stooping to finishing?
It's not that. We've got quarter cast stuff, and we just thought we'd try it, but it might, you never know, you might never see it, but it's just something, it's kind of one of the experiments we've got going on just now.
Is that part of the fun of this, just being able to experiment, play around with the spirit, because you know what it'll do under your normal conditions and your normal casks, but just to see what you can get out of a Laphroaig if you play with it a bit?
Well, you've got to know the kind of scope or your boundaries, so we're kind of testing them just now with some stuff, and it's good fun, kind of getting the professor's coat on and starting experimenting a wee bit, so it's always good to try and produce kind of different flavour profiles as well. Fun times, I guess.
Again, the online Laphroaig tasting starts at 2000 hours GMT. That's 3 p.m. on the U.S. East Coast Wednesday. And there are plenty of calculators online to help you figure out the difference in your time zone. There's a link for the sign-up page at the WhiskeyCast website. I received a calendar in the mail this week that might make an ideal holiday gift for the other whiskey lovers in your life. Workman Publishing's Malts of Scotland calendar features a different whiskey each month, along with distillery details and tasting notes. It's available through Amazon.com, and I've posted a link at the WhiskeyCast website. In the last episode, I mentioned the Balvenie's search for two U.S. brand ambassadors. Now, you might be thinking, it sounds like a great job, but I don't know enough about whiskey to get it. While many brand ambassadors do come out of the distillery ranks, some come from completely different backgrounds. For instance, Simon Brooking, the U.S. ambassador for Laphroaig and the Dalmore, also does theater work on the side. In fact, he's recently graduated from playing Tiny Tim in A Christmas Carol to playing Tiny Tim's father, Bob Cratchit. And Bernie Lubbers of Knob Creek Bourbon came from the stage, too.
Tell me how you became a brand ambassador to begin with.
Oh, Lordy. How much time you got? I was, you know, always enjoyed bourbon growing up in from Kentucky. I did comedy for 20 years and did a bit about my dad on stage, about the way he drank bourbon and the bourbon he liked and how he did this stuff.
He'll eat the fat off your steak. He don't like it too lean. He's outlived three doctors thanks to old Jim Beam. He eats a pork chop sandwich most days for lunch. Fries everything in butter or bacon grease. He passes constant gas through his BVDs. He swills citrus cell like it's gourmet fruit punch. He's my dad. He's my dad. 92 years old, still walking. That ain't half bad. He claims he's older than Santa Claus, and that's a fact. He's graduated with Jesus. How about that? Now that's old school. That's my dad. Mm-hmm.
Sunday crossword, and he's not even crying. He screams, I can't see, but he's still driving. But if he hits you, you won't get hurt. He don't drive that fast. Tracks the storm team all through the day, then checks his rain gauge after every rain. He's going cross-eyed, reading all that crap scribbled on the bottom of CNN. He's my dad. He's my dad. His toenails look like Frito's corn chips right out of the bag. He's sitting home right now with his glass of cheer. I bet he outlives half of us sitting here. He's pickled. He ain't going nowhere. He's my dad. So here's to my dad. Raise a toast to my dad. I'm sure glad I got to know you. I love you, Dad.
And then the guys at Jim Beam got to know me and saw me perform and just befriended me. And I was hanging around with them at different tastings. They would invite me to different whiskey fests and different things. And a job came up with Jim Beam, and they asked me if I wanted to come off the road and do a gig with Jim Beam. And 3 years later, here I am.
Does the stand-up background give you some benefits when it comes to performing in front of a crowd and talking about whiskey?
Every day, because I talk, you know, I've done comedy in little places in Florida and West Virginia and all that. It's to like five people and to 500 people. And I do staff trainings and consumer dinners all the time. And of course it does. It works real good, real well.
And you're, of course, used to the road life, too.
Oh, yeah. My life's a paid vacation, I tell people.
Now, here's another story of someone who came out of nowhere to land a brand ambassador's job. Chris Brousseau of Toronto is heading to Scotland to become the brand ambassador for Inverhouse's and Knock Single Malt.
I entered a competition in a newspaper. We're going to move to Dufftown, hopefully, in the next few months, and we subscribed to the Northern Scott newspaper, and there was this competition on there. They're looking for international brand ambassadors and local ambassadors, so you had to write a 50-word essay on why I'd be a good international brand ambassador. So in 50 words, I mean, I love whiskey, we're moving there, giving everything up, you know, moving over to Scotland. Must have something to do with it. So we're moving over there, and so right now we went over and had a great trip over there. Gave us lots of whiskey, a tour of the distillery, a few nights up in a hotel, and they really treated us royally. And now we've got a blog on their website at www.annock.com. So I'm their international blog ambassador.
And so this is a brand new venture for you then, right?
It's just fun, yeah, something entered. And Annock's been really great. Inverhouse has been really great and really supportive. So when we get over there, I'm hoping to continue on working with them.
How much experience did you have with Annock beforehand other than as a drinker?
As a drinker. That was about it. As a drinker. Very little, actually, because we haven't been able to get Annock in Ontario. I think there's a 30-year-old, a few bottles of it, which I got, but it's very hard to get. I haven't seen it for several years. So they come out with the new brandy and everything looked really nice, and it just looked like really good whiskey, and I went over and it worked out well.
That link for the Balvenie search is still at the WhiskeyCast website. I'd love to have a listener or two get those jobs. The events calendar is starting to quiet down for the holidays, but there are still a few things going on between now and the end of the year. The Inter-Whiskey Festival is this coming weekend in Frankfurt, Germany, followed by the Whiskey Ship Festival in Zurich starting November 29th. Maker's Mark in Loretto, Kentucky will hold candlelight distillery tours on December 1st and 8th. The Dundee Dell in Omaha has scotch tastings on December 2nd and 6th. By the way, that's one of the few bars where you can order Black Bowmore by the glass. December 8th is the Rare Spirits Auction at Christie's in New York City, and the following night is the Bowery Poetry Society's annual Single Malt Poetry Slam, also in New York. And finally, tickets are on sale for the first festival of 2008, the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia, January 25th through the 27th. You'll find a calendar of 2008 whiskey events on the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Lots of whiskeys claim to be the best-selling single malt, the best-selling blend, the best-selling bourbon, but there's only one whiskey that can call itself the world's best-selling whiskey, period. Jack Daniel's sells more than 10 million cases of its Black Label Tennessee whiskey worldwide each year, all out of one distillery in Lynchburg. In 2008, master distiller Jimmy Bedford will mark 40 consecutive years at Jack Daniel's.
Well, I grew up there in Lynchburg, about 2 miles from the distillery, and living on a farm, worked there during my high school and college days. And the last year of work there, they said, would you like to come back and go to work here at Jack Daniel? I said, I think I would. So I worked a couple of years somewhere else, but in 1968, I went to work there full-time, working under Frank Bobo, who was the master distiller at that time. And I worked with him until he retired in 1988. So that's how I got my start.
What's it like working at the distillery on a day-to-day basis?
Well, back, it's changed a lot. You know, we've got a lot more tourists coming in, and my job has changed a lot. But people from all over the world want to come in, want to see you, want to talk with you and visit with you. And visitors, just an ordinary visitor, see you walking up and down the street, they want to come over and say hello to you as well. But again, it's a very unique place. And I'd just like to say this, that there's not a lot of people in the world that can grow up in a little small community the size of Lynchburg, less than 400 people, go back there and work all their life and make a decent living, you know, to support their family. So I'm lucky in that respect, too. But to be with Jack Daniel in a product that's sold around the world, I get a lot of satisfaction out of that.
How has the business changed over the years since 1968 for you?
Well, it's grown tremendously. Well, we had a lot of powerful growth up until the early 80s that it slacked off a little bit. Jack Daniel never had a negative year. We've never had a negative year. But starting back in the late 80s and early 90s, we started back, growing at double-digit figures again. But we've taken on a lot of international markets as well, where we're doing anywhere from 15 to 45% in those new markets. I know the base is small. And we're doing 8 or 9% growth here in the U.S., average those two together, and Jack Daniel is really, really lucky. Actually, we're the largest whiskey in the world now, have been for several years.
What's it like for you on a day when you're walking into the Rick houses and smelling those barrels? What's it like for you? Give me sort of that, paint that picture for me, if you will.
Well, that's a good question. A few years ago, I was up in Massachusetts, and I asked this guy with our company, I said, what motivates you every day? And he's telling me about he changed jobs, and he'd get to meet all these people every day. So I assumed he was going to turn around and ask me that same thing. But when I drive to work and turn in the distillery every morning, there's a big statue of Jack Daniel looking down the holler. And I just think that if that guy could see me, what I'm doing today, and see what we're doing to promote his brand, that he'd be very, very pleased in what we're doing there today. And there is a lot of activity. 250,000 people a year come through to take a tour, turning out 10 million cases of product in the bottle. So there's a lot of activity going on, even though it's a quiet, sleepy little town.
Now, you had some problems with the drought earlier this summer, right?
Well, we're still having, we're still in a dry time. It's this is a dry season for us, of course, and there were several questions come up about that, but we were down for a month for repairs and maintenance. We started back the other day, back making a lot of product, hopefully somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 million gallons, and we've got a big cushion, and I don't, if something were to happen, drastic to happen, but we don't expect that. I tell people that the cave has been running for millions of years, and it hadn't gone dry there yet, so we're not expecting it to go dry here now.
How important is it to you? I'm assuming it is pretty important, but give me a sense of what it takes to maintain the legacy that this distillery has, because more than any other American distillery, this place has a real unique place in American history.
Mark, that is a very good question to ask, because it's a very easy question for me to answer, in the fact that every bit of Jack Daniel is made at one location there in Lynchburg, Tennessee. People connect to that. So some guy asked me not long ago, he said, two words or less, tell me why Jack Daniel has been so successful. I said, well, give me three. So first off, I said quality, but everybody thinks they've got a quality product. Second is our heritage there in Lynchburg. We've made there, we're bottled there, it's aged there by the people that live there in that community, and people become connected to that as well. And the third thing today, I think that we've become somewhat of an Americana in a name. Just say Jack around the world, wherever you may be, and you'll recognize what we're talking about. Our governor, I was in China a month ago. Our governor was there 2 weeks ago. He came back. He said, I just can't imagine my state is representing so well in the country of China. But we're out there around the world.
Give me a sense of what you're going through when you pick a barrel of whiskey, because I know that you still play a key critical role in selecting the whiskeys that actually get bottled. What are you looking for when you go into a bottle, when you go into a barrel? What are you looking for?
Well, I am involved in that barrel selection. I'm on the pre-panel that pre-approves of the barrels for whoever would like to come. But when someone comes and sits down with me to select a barrel, I always like to think about, personally, I always like to think about one that's got a lot of toasted oak, caramel, a little light in the vanilla, where if it's a lady or someone, they might prefer a little more vanilla barrel, but I'm looking for a lot of toasted oak, woody, caramel flavor in a barrel that I help select for someone.
And you've actually had to extend the range a little bit now with the single barrel version of Jack Daniel's and the Gentleman Jack. What's the differences in those compared to the regular?
Well, those three that you mentioned make up our family brand. And of course, the Black Label makes up like 97% of everything we sell. And single barrel, we came out with in 97. The Gentleman Jack, we came out with in 1988. Gentleman Jack goes through the charcoal twice before aging and then after aging. So it's going to be a little bit lighter, smoother, a little bit lesser characteristics of the barrel than what the other two have. Now, the single barrel is aged and matured a little bit longer up in the top portion of the warehouse, and when it's bottled, it's never mixed or mingled with product from another barrel. So each barrel is going to have its own unique character about it, and it'll be a little bit different from barrel to barrel. But we're looking for that.
And you mentioned the charcoal process. That's the whole Lincoln County process. For the person who doesn't quite know what that is, explain how that works.
Well, as you probably realize, that we're called a Tennessee sour mash whiskey and not a bourbon because of that charcoal mellowing process. And it is referred to as the Lincoln County process. And then what that means, Lincoln County was the county we used to be in, but now we're in Moore County because they redrew the county. But anyway, that is where we take a sugar maple tree that grows in our area, same one they would take maple syrup from up in the north here. Take that sugar maple tree and process it into a charcoal and let our whiskey seep down through that charcoal prior to going into that new barrel. And with that one step, it cleans it up, takes a little bit of the undesirable grainy flavors and aromas out of it, and that one step is what makes Jack Daniel a Tennessee whiskey and not a bourbon.
And then running it through twice takes even more out, or what does it do?
Well, when you go through it the second time, it's not as extensive the second time on the Gentleman Jack, but it does take out a little bit of the characteristics of the barrel, but we're looking for that variation, and I'm not going to say one's any better than the other one. It just gives our friends and customers something to select from.
You having fun still?
Do I?
Are you having fun still?
I do, and you know, I could probably go home if I chose, but I really enjoy my company. I enjoy getting out and meeting people like yourself around the world. I go to Mexico City this coming Saturday. I was in California last week doing these kind of things, so I meet a lot of interesting people in our trade.
Now, you're spending a lot of time on the road. How much time do you actually get to spend at the distillery?
Well, probably 50% of my time would be spent out on the road, but again, when I'm back there, I take part in the Century Lab and make sure that we're still doing what we should be doing.
Now, are you training up a protege here?
We have a person that's probably going to be responsible for making the product, and he's a very smart individual, and he's been around 20-something years, and he will do an excellent job in running the plant. Now, whether he does some of the PR thing that I'm doing today, that remains to be seen.
Tough question here. Which one of the three do you pick when you're picking a drink?
Well, that's a good question in the fact that if I'm going to have me a cocktail out somewhere, I always choose the single barrel. It's our newest product. I want bartenders to recognize it, know what it is, and then we can take on it from there. But if I'm at home by myself, the Jack Daniel Black Label would probably be the one I drink on a daily basis by myself. I'm at home.
Last question. What do you want your legacy to be as a distiller?
Well, I would like to think that I had some something to do with maybe pushing Jack Daniel into the markets and around the world at where we are today in a successful way.
Next time around, we'll talk with another veteran distiller, David Stewart, the malt master for William Grant & Sons. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.